This is Research Spotlight at Cumbria.
I worked in primary schools and middle school and two HEIs before I came to the University of Cumbria. I'm quite ambitious. And then I saw the advert for the course leader for religious education here and got the job. And this is the longest I have ever stayed anywhere. And it's the pull of the university, its mission and what it stands for. And also, I love the Lake District. And I had one child when I came, and now we've got three. So they were settled. So that's why I stayed.
In this podcast series, we're profiling our researchers, hearing in detail about their work and the impact this has on wider society.
Just before I came, I'd published an article on spirituality, because religious education is my background. One of the four dimensions that I talked about was the environmental dimension. So just being here amongst all this beauty is stunning. I'm Sally Elton-Childcraft, and I'm Professor of Social Justice in Education at the University of Cumbria. Currently, I'm Director of the Learning, Education and Development Research Centre, and I work mainly with PhD students. Also, in the past, I've worked with master's students and also undergraduates in the past, but currently I'm working with PGCE, so postgraduate students who want to become teachers.
That's a real cross-section. Of students, isn't it, from starting out to PhD, in between.
And I've taught in infant schools as well, so I've done the whole thing, right from like 3-year-olds up to 60 plus.
Wow, brilliant. And obviously still love it and still enjoy doing what you do.
I love it, yeah. It's important work.
Why is it important?
It's important because I believe very strongly in social justice in education, so equality and diversity. That's my main kind of area, and religious education. So when I was a primary school teacher and a middle school teacher, I was head of religious education and personal and social education. And all my senior leadership positions have always been in that area. And so for me, it's really important to dismantle injustice and really think about things like anti-racism, gender equality, LGBTQ plus issues, things like that. So I've always been interested in making the world a fairer place. That's been at the heart of every single thing that I do.
Is it something that's changed in the time that you've been involved? I'm thinking of church attendances, for example. You mentioned your interest in spirituality. You've written about it. I keep reading that the number of people going to church is declining. And yet the subjects you just mentioned, rights and justice, have probably never been stronger. I think we probably read more and understand more about that at a time. So there's almost like a sort of a conflict between people wanting to go to church seems to be reducing, and yet people who have an interest in making sure that the world, as you say, is a better place seems to be increasing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I think people are very interested in what being a human is all about, and different people have different perspectives. So one of the things that I've been working on recently is about Muslims. And so governmental policy, the prevent policy and the imposition of promoting fundamental British values is something that myself and scholars outside the University of Cumbria have been very interested in. So I work with scholars at other universities, Canterbury Christchurch, Huddersfield, various other places. And we're really looking at this idea of Muslims as a suspect community and how governmental legislation has actually positioned communities, particularly Muslims, as a suspect community. So I presented recently at a conference in Oxford University at Oriel College, where I was speaking at the Society for Educational Studies on this very thing. And the research that I'd undertaken was really exploring how Muslims have been positioned as a suspect community. And I was looking at three women in particular, Shamima Begum, who was the woman as a teenager who went off to Syria to be an ISIS bride. And then there's another woman who was in another colleague's piece of research called Hamida, who decided as a Muslim woman that she wanted to explore her faith of Islam more deeply. And so she started wearing the hijab, the covering. And then I've also been looking at Nadia Hussein, who won the British Bake Off to 2015. And so these three women I took as archetypal, sort of types of Muslim women, and how different people looked at those three women. And I presented my results at this Oriel College, Oxford. And the way they are looked at by three different types of society are the security services, who obviously want to root out terrorists. And obviously, I'm not against that. You know, it's really important. But, you know, those people tend to be very suspicious of particularly people like Shamima Begum. And as you may know, Shamima was denied British citizenship when she was found in this refugee camp in Syria. The security services are very wary of people who suddenly have a renewed interest in their faith, and they think they might be potential terrorists. So that's the Hamida bit. And then the, you know, people like Nadia Hussein, they're people who the security forces would like to use as people who can win the hearts and minds of the public. So, and then there's a second group who are fearful. And then there's a third group, which I think teacher educators and teachers and the educational context ought to belong to, who should, in my opinion, be more tolerant and open and welcoming of all three women and trying to understand their needs. Because our job is not to be agents of surveillance. I've published an article with other colleagues about this. Teachers are not agents of surveillance. Let the security services do their bit. Let us as educators do our bit, which is to provide an open space and not view Muslims as a suspect community, but rather try and understand where people are coming from and why they behave as they behave. And so we're trying to work against chilling of those communities. So that's a piece of research I've been doing quite recently.
And have you looked at the impact the media has on this very subject? Because I'm sure by the time that your colleagues perhaps come to a place like this, you know, their minds are kind of made up because of what they've heard and what they've read.
I did another piece of research with student teachers, actually, and I got some other students that I was working with to interview people, because sometimes, you know, I'm getting on a bit now, you know, and I wanted them to be interviewed by people their own age and their peers. And they really did. The participants really opened up, you know, to their peers, to fellow students. You know, we talked about the questions and everything. And we found that student teachers felt doubly disadvantaged, you know, especially students on this campus. You know, it's a predominantly white area. And so they hadn't really come into contact with people of a different ethnicity to their own background. And also, so they got no experience. And also, they'd not really done an awful lot of thinking about that either. So I think it's really important for everybody to understand the issues. You have to do your homework. You've got to really understand what the issues are, why people are being discriminated against, and then think about what your role is. People sometimes challenge you. You know, I'm a white female of a particular age, getting on in years now. You know, we really have to think about where our ethnicity and education is located and how we can use that to best advantage to work as a white ally and work with people together. I talk a lot about that kind of research, you know, the anti-racism in particular, and I've done lots of keynotes and invited seminars and things like that. So my lanyard that I'm wearing today is the anti-racist Cumbria. And in fact, I was an invited panel member at their art summit a couple of years ago. We need to work together. We need to collaborate together. So we work very much in Cumbria, but also throughout the world as well. So I meet on a regular basis with colleagues from Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Israel, and Europe. We have a study group. So this came about particularly during COVID, actually, when scholars felt quite isolated. And I'm a committee member, and at that point I held the purse strings of the Teacher Education Advancement Network, TEEN, and we were approached by these Australian colleagues to join this network, and we have study groups, and we study books on a regular basis. So one of the books is World-Centered Education by Gert Biester, who I've heard speak, and actually he attended one of our presentations that we did about this work. And we go through the book and we all say what we think about it, and we meet at either 7 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night. So
yeah,
dedicated stuff. But I was beginning to feel a bit intellectually flabby, you know, with all the constraints that the education system and the government put upon us in higher education. And I just really enjoyed those times. They were very precious to me. And they were a good way of starting to the day, you know. So it's like an intellectual gym workout, really. Talking with like-minded people, sharing ideas about intellectual things like this. And at the end of it, it was my idea, actually, with other people to present that work. So we presented our thoughts on Biester's philosophy of education at the British Educational Research Association. And I was invited to be a keynote panel member there last year. And I talked about my work in anti-racism. And then this year we presented as a symposium on our work, looking at our views on education. So I kind of feel as though, you know, education is in a bit of a pickle at the moment. We're constrained by governmental policy, which is what I was talking about earlier. And I think it's time for us all to get together, collaborate, and really make a difference to legislators and governments and education systems.
Do you think this research will, first of all, A, get people thinking, but also will it lead to action? You just hinted about changing in legislation. Do you hope that your work will be seen as something that should be taken up by Yvette Cooper or whoever to try and make a difference?
Yeah. And the Education Secretary, I think, is going to come and speak with us at the University of Cumbria in the future. And it's very important that we have the ear of politicians. I'm not wishing to be party political, but I think it's more likely that we can do so with the current government. It's really important that teachers understand. One of the things that I've been trying to do is work with teachers. So I was invited by the National Religious Education Society to give a keynote there as well. And one of the things that I said was, it's important for teachers to thoroughly understand the issues, you know, understand what the problems with governmental policy are, how they can marginalise certain groups of people. And this is what's led to the great sort of National Front sort of riots and so on. And what I found really good was actually the community themselves stood up and went, hang on a minute, actually, no, we're not discriminating against the Muslims here. They've been really supportive. And when their mosques were attacked, the local community stood in solidarity with them. And I kind of thought, yes, because like you, I was beginning to think, goodness me, we're going backwards. You know, instead of going one step forward, we were going two steps backwards. And so I am heartened that things are on the brink of changing. But there's always something political on the agenda in this area that I research, conflict in Gaza and Israel. And you've got to take your shoes off and try and put yourself into the shoes of the other people, because both sides are very passionate about what they believe, but they've just got to try and work it out in a more peaceful way. And that's easy for me to say as a scholar in my ivory tower, but it has got to be like that. You know, violence for me is not the way. I'm a big sort of follower of Martin Luther King and Gandhi, and peaceful protest, which can be so powerful. And I think that's at the heart of what I believe in.
It strikes me that your research is probably utterly crucial.
It is. Because I think so.
The timing, you know, but I mean, it's also, it's a shame it's needed. 20 years ago when you were starting out in this area, when it comes to what life was like then compared to how it is now, but the job of teachers has probably never been more important, because they can influence the next generation to say, hang on a second, make a difference.
For me, the most important thing is to understand that human beings have particular desires. They want to feel loved and to belong. And sometimes that can spill out into tribalism type thing. That's probably the wrong word. But you know, in groups and out groups, human beings always want to belong to a particular group. And that's fine. But what, in my opinion, shouldn't happen is then attacking a group that's different to you. For me, it's hanging on to what's important for you and your group, but also understanding a different perspective. And that's what I try and do in religious education, and be caring about it, you know, getting people to care about what somebody else believes. It may be different. That's fine. You know, you're never going to agree with everybody. You know, to try and understand, take your shoes off and put the shoes on of somebody else. Take your glasses off, put the glasses on of somebody else. You're never going to agree with them. And I don't agree with that either. Trying to make everybody the same is an idea of colorblindness. You know, when teachers sort of say, "Oh, I treat them all the same," it's like, well, no, actually, that's actually worse. You know, that's not helpful. You need to look at every single person, where they're coming from, what their individuality is, and also see them as a community as well. I think we're losing community, and communities working and functioning together is what's important. We're not all individuals. And I think that's something, again, that I'm trying to work at, looking at alternative perspectives. I'm very into at the moment the concept of Ubuntu. I am me because of you are you, and this idea of community and working together. And it's something that the East and the Global South have understood for thousands of years. And I think Western, and I don't wish to discriminate between West and East and Global South and so on, because it's not that simple. But there's an idea of a community, a collective, against individual. And you can see it in the exam system. We test individuals. That's not how society works. Society isn't a whole load of individuals. Society is groups of people. So most of the things I do in collaboration. I did my PhD by myself because you had to, and I produced a sole-authored book from it. You know, it's not just about black and white, miss. That was a sole-authored book. But everything else I do in collaboration with other people. So I did my Muslims as a Suspect Community with other people. And I've done other books where I've collaborated with other people. So for me, that's important.
I'm curious, the work, where's it going to take you next? What is your hope? What's your ambition?
My ambition is really to continue to work with people, not imposing my ideas, but working with people, collaborating, energizing people to think deeply and to act wisely, really. And so I have collaborated on textbooks. And what I want to make sure of is that those textbooks are used and are drawn on, not just at the University of Cumbria, but in the country and also internationally. So I would really like some of these ideas and some of the ideas in these textbooks to be used by people in all education systems throughout the world.
Collaboration, I imagine, in this area, though, it can be quite tricky. Not just, you mentioned before, getting up at 7 a.m. to have a Zoom call or a Teams call with me, but I'm thinking of, you know, having slightly different perspectives and trying to agree a text must itself be quite hard.
It is. And so one of the things that we're doing at the moment is we're doing a special issue of a journal where this Australian, and it's called ITERC, International Teacher Education Research Collective. And we're trying to work collaboratively, sharing ideas with each other about the context that we're in, and trying to come to some understanding of what would be really good practice, what would be really good educational philosophy. And we do disagree, and that's great. I think disagreement is where it happens. But trying to push back against this instrumentalism and technicist education, which I think is not very good. It's for them, it's doing the right thing. It's passing the test. For me, it's not doing things right, you know, passing the test or working towards a particular goal. It's doing the right thing, being fully human, understanding people's different perspectives.
So go on, people listening to this from all walks of life, I'm sure, students and prospective students. You've already set out that it's very timely. I think it's very interesting research as well. What would you say to people perhaps who want to follow your lead and take a leaf out of your book and maybe enter this kind of area for further study or future study at some stage?
Work with and discuss ideas with others. I think that's absolutely vital. And take every opportunity that you can. So we had an opportunity as a family. My husband was successful in gaining a grant to go to India. And I went with him and we took our three children as well. And we did some research out in India. So taking every opportunity that you can. And we wrote this, or he wrote this book, Encountering Diversity in Indian Biblical Studies. And we visited villages and I visited schools in India. So really taking every opportunity that you can is really important. Discuss ideas with other people, not just those who are like-minded, but also those who disagree with you. Because again, it's this looking at things from a different perspective. I think it's really important to carve out time and make time to think deeply about issues. I'm reading a book at the moment for our study group with iTurk on free time in universities. I wish you hadn't used the word free time, because free time kind of sounds like you're being self-indulgent, and it isn't that. I would have liked study time to have been the word that he used. But, you know, making time, which is what I've started to do, to really think deeply. And actually, that thinking deeply can sometimes happen on your journey to work. So some of my best ideas are when I'm traveling or on a walk and things like that. And certainly going back to Charlotte Mason, she used to do that as well. So carve out time and make time to think deeply about the issues that you're interested in, and then using time wisely to forward your interests and make a big difference. The third thing, I think, would be to read widely and deeply, a range of authors and a range of scholars' work. So, you know, the people that I'm working with in PhD work, I really try and get them to look at lots of different theorists, think about doing things in a different way. And then fourthly, being positive and seeking support and being supportive of others. And also, I'm a glass half full kind of gal, I always say. You know, looking at the positives, not thinking of what you can't do, what you haven't got, what isn't there, what's impossible, but looking at what you have got, what is there, what you can use, because that's how you can move forward. I mean, you know, you've got to understand the barriers and you've got to understand the limitations, and everybody has knockbacks. I've had loads.
I was going to say, it's great to have that attitude, isn't it? But there must have been times, and certainly in 20 years and all these documents that you've written, where there's been an occasion where you thought, actually, this isn't going as I thought it would do.
Yeah, these are the ones that I've published. But there's a whole load of others that haven't made it. One in particular I can think of, I've been bitterly disappointed by it. And I actually think it wasn't published because the subject matter was just too hard for the publisher. And also, you know, you get frightful reviewers who are just mean. They're mean. They're not nice. I mean, you can be critical in a pleasant way. Manner. There is no excuse, I don't think, for being rude. I work as a reviewer and an editor on a journal, and there were these reviews that came in to these people that had submitted a journal article. And to be fair, the journal article was a bit under par. It was a bit one-sided. Well, it was very one-sided, and it was very religious, which is fine. And the reviewer had really been very vindictive in their review. And I just thought, what they were saying was absolutely valid, but the way they said it was mean. And I don't think that's on. So I reported them. I told the person that was reading the review, what they're saying is actually okay, but the way they've said it, I totally disagree with. So please don't be downhearted. And I think it's this caring. You know, you've got to care for people. You've got to push people forward, but in a supportive way.
How do you pick yourself up? You must have had knockbacks. The one you hinted at before. So how do you kind of take a step back, take a deep breath?
It takes a long while.
How do you do it?
It takes a long while, actually, Nigel. Yeah, I've had quite a few knockbacks and my memory is not so good. So I kind of forget things. So I have to constantly write stuff down. It's very, very challenging for me and I have to be incredibly well prepared. And if I'm not, I make mistakes and then I normally beat myself up horrendously afterwards. But then I think, do you know what? You're just human. We all do our best. And at the end of the day, I have a little bit of time out and I think, okay, that didn't go so well. Somebody criticized me for that, or I've criticized myself, or that didn't go well for a whole raft of reasons. I sit and I think about it. I usually talk about it with other people. I think that's really crucial, crucial, working together with other people. And usually those people say, you made a mistake, but you know what? That's how we learn, you know? And they help me pick myself up and carry on, because this is important work. I met with someone the other day and I confessed something that had not gone right. And she said to me, she's a good friend, and she said, Sally, you have a choice. She's black. She said, and I said, yeah, but it's nothing compared with the rubbish that you've had to deal with and the racism that you've had to deal with. She said, yeah, I know. And I've had a terrible time. Yeah. But she said, you've got to keep going because you have a choice. You can walk away. You don't have to do this stuff. You don't have to take this rubbish. But you have a choice and you choose to keep doing it. And I still didn't quite kind of believe that, because, you know, it's so much easier for me than it is for people who are discriminated against. One of the biggest career highlights for me was when I became a professor and I was invited to give an inaugural lecture. And it was an opportunity for me to bring together many of the things, not all because I couldn't include everything, but many of the things that had been important to me throughout my sort of research career. And I was very honoured to have been given this opportunity, and I compiled a PowerPoint which talked about all my work on anti-racism, my work on leadership, my work in India, which I really enjoyed doing. It was a real privilege working with people in India, a real privilege. And looking at an education system which is very challenging. And some of the teachers that I work with and some of the children that I met, the young people that I met, were doing a great job. Also, I talked about the textbooks that I've written, and ones that I've been really proud of is a textbook called Professional Studies in Primary Education that I've edited with Hilary Cooper. So Cooper and Elton Charcraft. And I've been working on this with Hilary. This is the fourth edition. And the last three editions, I've been the one that's been responsible for commissioning all the new authors. And I'm really proud of that. So I spoke about that at the inaugural. And it covers a whole load of things, you know, the history of education, language and learning in a multilingual world, British values, outdoor learning, and then that links with the Charlotte Mason stuff, you know, moving on to master's level, teachers' well-being and all of that. And I really feel as though that textbook is so important for student teachers. And I talked about that in my inaugural. And the other thing that I'm really proud of as well that I talked about in my inaugural, and actually the second edition of it has come out, is Teaching Religious and Worldviews Education Creatively by Routledge, published by Routledge. And I've edited that. And again, I've got all my mates, I call them, in the RE world to contribute chapters, some really exciting scholars that I managed to get to write chapters in that book. And I'm very, very proud of that. The pride that I have is not just in myself, but in the way I've got other people to work together.
The community, so, I suppose.
Yeah, the community. Yeah. And that's what I'm really, really proud of.
Well, Sally, it's been fascinating to talk to you for half an hour, so I could talk a lot longer, I'm sure, and I wish you well with all the important research you're doing, very timely, as we mentioned before. If there was just the one word to describe the kind of person you are, what word would you choose?
Yeah, I've thought about this long and hard, and I think caring, but not just caring, fiercely caring, fiercely or ambitiously caring. I care about equality and diversity and making the world a fairer place. And I care about research integrity and scholarship and being wise in everything that you do. But also, and I think more importantly, as a human being, I care about people. I really do. And I'm passionately, vigorously, fiercely caring about people, the colleagues that I work with, both at the University of Cumbria and other colleagues in you know, all the other areas that I work in, both nationally and internationally, and trying to nurture people to be the best that they can be. And also, I care a lot about my family and my friends, and I think it's really important to keep a work-life balance. I'm not the kind of scholar, well, I try not to be, to not be a good friend. I try and be a good wife, I try and be a good mother, I try and be a good aunt, and so on. I think it's really important to be a good human being, and I care deeply about the people that I love.
So caring is definitely the word that comes across loud and clear. Professor, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much for your time, and we wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for downloading this edition of Research Spotlight at Cumbria. Be sure to subscribe and spread the word.